Assassin. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, it's been a crazy week in the NBA. Just dudes have been scoring like no other. You know, with Donovan Mitchell on Monday night dropping the 71 points, which I already talked about on Wednesday's show. But also on Monday night, Klay Thompson of the Golden State Warriors, he had a phenomenal night. You know, he's been up and down because, you know, he's coming back from those horrific injuries that he suffered. So he's obviously lost a step since then, and he really hasn't been the same player. You know, he's capable of getting the job done, but he just hasn't really been the same Klay Thompson that we, in his prime at least. And on Monday night, in a double overtime win against the Atlanta Hawks, Klay Thompson dropped 54 points, 8 rebounds, and 3 assists. So he just had probably one of his best nights of his career since the surgeries that he had. And it was a big win, too. Double overtime win against the Atlanta Hawks. Not a bad team either. 143-141. And so he had a solid night. Then on Tuesday night, Giannis Antetokounmpo, he dropped 55 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals against Washington, the Washington Wizards, and in a win, 123-113. And it was kind of hilarious, too, because Giannis in the press conference basically called himself a boring player. He kind of feels like nobody's really paying attention to him, and that's totally fine. It's just kind of funny he says it, because I think that's quite the opposite for him. I think he's a phenomenal player, but I get what he's saying, because he's not like electric or flashy or really anything like that, but he's just consistent every single night, and dropping 55 points, it's a big deal for him. One of the best nights of his career. He also had the 10 rebounds, so it was a big double-double for him, almost a triple-double. But he had a big night. And then last night, Thursday night, Lauri Markkanen, he has been having a great season for the Utah Jazz so far. I mean, this has turned out to be an excellent pickup for the Jazz, which is very shocking because I honestly did not think the Jazz were going to be that good. And while they have fallen off a bit from the beginning of the season, they still are playing very well. And Markkanen is the main reason why. And he dropped 49 points and 8 rebounds last night against the Houston Rockets in a win, 131-114. Just a lot of scoring that went on in the NBA this week. And NBA season starting to get heated up. The Lakers still suck, though, so there's still that. Anyways, on to the NFL. We do have a bit of good news with concerning Damar Hamlin. After his cardiac arrest on the field on Monday night, he's pretty much been progressing in a positive direction every single day. As far as today's update goes, he is actually he FaceTimed with the team today during their team meeting. So I'm sure that was very uplifting for the Bills. And very uplifting for him, and it's great to hear that it sounds like he's going to be neurologically intact. He still obviously has a ways to go, but to hear that he's speaking, actually the first thing he was most concerned with when he woke up was who won the game. So that's pretty fucking awesome to hear. I'm glad he's progressing in the right direction, and I wish him the best in his recovery here. And then concerning that Monday night game, that it did end up getting postponed. But as of yesterday, the NFL officially canceled that game. They're not going to play that game at all. And on a selfish note, I'm glad they're not, because I personally, and I'm sure this is kind of the feeling around most fans and really around the league, is the playoffs are next week, and we want to start the playoffs next week. It really would have been stupid, because they had a couple options out on the table, and one of the options was to play that Cincinnati-Buffalo game next week and then kind of push the playoffs back by a week. And I just don't think that was a good idea just for one game. And both teams, they're both in the playoffs. It really just affects seeding. And there is this whole convoluted thing that's going to work out where there's a possibility that the AFC Championship game is going to be played on a neutral site. I'm not going to go through all the scenarios. I didn't really actually understand most of the scenarios. I really couldn't care less because it doesn't affect the Cowboys, so what the fuck do I care? But they officially canceled this game, and we will be moving on to the playoffs next week. So let's get into week 18, the last week of the NFL season. It is just crazy how fast the regular season goes by. It really honestly just feels like yesterday I was crying about Dak Prescott breaking his thumb and me feeling like the season was completely over, and my Dallas Cowboys are actually looking like one of the best teams in the league. So that's what happens when you're a melodramatic fan like that. You put it out there recordings so people could go back and listen to that shit if they really want to. But at least unlike most people, I admit what a stupid fan I could be. Most people, they really can't actually admit those type of things. I most certainly can. But let's get into week 18. We have a lot of mismatches this week, but we also have a couple of games that do matter as far as the playoffs are concerned. So let's get started. We do have a couple of games on Saturday, which is excellent. Because you know what, man, throughout the playoffs, we actually have Saturday games and Sunday games. So it's like just fucking great. These last couple of weeks, it's been like Saturday, Sunday football, and we still get Saturday, Sunday football for the next couple of weeks. So we have a couple of games this week on Saturday, beginning with the Kansas City Chiefs at the Las Vegas Raiders. Right now, the Chiefs are a 9.5-point favorite. The Raiders have absolutely nothing to play for, and I kind of feel like that's going to show on the field, whereas the Chiefs, they're looking to get that number one seed. And they're also looking to head into the playoffs with a win. You always, no matter what, if you're even if you're playoff bound, even if you 100% know what's going to happen with you making the playoffs, you still want to head into the playoffs on a good note. And I kind of feel like that's what the Chiefs are going to do. They might at some point sit some of their starters, maybe in the second half, maybe in the fourth quarter, something like that. But I kind of feel like the Chiefs are going to roll in this one 31-14. Then the Tennessee Titans are at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Right now the Jaguars are a 6.5-point favorite, and this is one of the games that actually does matter. This is for the AFC South. Whoever wins this game wins the division and gets a playoff spot and gets a home playoff game, so that's always a good thing. The Titans have looked so bad this second half of the season. It's just crazy how bad they have looked. And I don't see how they're going to get any better. Whereas the Jaguars, they're the exact opposite. They've beat a few good teams. They've really stepped it up offensively. Defensively, they're making some plays. And I feel like they're really starting to believe in themselves and believe in what Doug Peterson is doing with this team. So I feel like the Jaguars are actually going to win this game. I feel like it's going to be close at first, and the Jaguars will just start to run away with it in the second half. And I have the Jaguars winning this division 28-17. Now moving on to the Sunday games, we have the Baltimore Ravens at the Cincinnati Bengals. Right now the Bengals are a 6.5-point favorite. This one is kind of convoluted as well. I can't recall what happens with the division in this one. I think if the Bengals win, they win the division. If the Ravens win, there's going to be like a coin toss for the division. So we'll see what happens there. I believe that's what's correct. Regardless, I feel like Cincinnati's going to win this game anyways, because Cincinnati, before the injury happened in Monday's game, they looked like they were ready to just make some big plays and continue the offensive gameplay. And the Ravens, it's not looking like Lamar Jackson's going to play. So I just kind of question whether or not they're going to be able to do anything offensively. And the Bengals are just going to be too much for them to keep up with. I think it'll be relatively close, but I think the Bengals will get the win in this one 24-13. Then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are at the Atlanta Falcons. Right now, the Falcons are a 3.5-point favorite, which, wow, that's kind of odd. Didn't expect to see that because the Falcons are an absolutely awful team. Not that the Bucs are phenomenal, but I mean, they're headed into the playoffs. I kind of feel like they're also one of those teams where it's like they want to go in on a positive note. Tom Brady actually already mentioned this week he does not want to be benched. And I feel him on that just because, I mean, it actually is stupid to bench your players. You can actually see it over the years. Usually those teams, they might make the playoffs. But if you don't head into the playoffs with any momentum and you don't get any gameplay, you usually lose right off the bat too. So I and especially with this Bucks team, they could use all the wins they could get. And so I kind of actually feel like this is going to be their best game of the season because Atlanta has absolutely nothing to play for. Tom Brady owns the Falcons. And so I actually think this is going to be the best game of the season for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think they're going to roll 31-10. Then the New England Patriots are at the Buffalo Bills. Right now the Bills are a 7.5-point favorite. You know, it's going to be difficult to figure out how the Bills are going to react to what happened to with their teammate DeMar Hamlin on the field on Monday night, because you feel like this is going to be a rallying thing, especially now that he spoke with them via FaceTime today. You feel like it's all headed in a positive direction, but you just really don't know how people are going to react to situations like that. And so, but I personally think they're going to react in a positive way. I feel like they're going to keep it rolling, and I feel like it's only going to fuel them to possibly win a championship this year. The Patriots, they are hanging on for dear life for that last wild card spot in the playoffs. But the Patriots just aren't a good team to me. While this is a division matchup, I just kind of feel like Buffalo's going to roll in this one 30-14. Then the Minnesota Vikings are at the Chicago Bears. Right now, the Vikings are a 3.5-point favorite. Justin Fields is not going to play in this game. Chicago's pretty much wrapped it up, and they're ready to go home. Vikings, they are sitting pretty in the playoffs, but they could use a win just because the playoff seeding in the NFC is still up for grabs. And so I feel like Minnesota's going to play hard in this one. It is a division battle, so I don't think they're going to run away with it. Just because, you know, this is always a matchup that tends to be pretty close anyways. But I do have the Vikings winning this one 24-17. Then the Houston Texans are at the Indianapolis Colts. Right now the Colts are a 2.5-point favorite. I was actually very torn on this one just because Houston is in line for the first pick overall in the draft. So, you know, they want that. But at the same time, they've played hard all season. And even though they've lost so many games, they've pretty much been in a lot of the games that they've lost. And the Colts are just a terrible team. They've already packed it in as well. But these are both two shitty teams with a division matchup. So I think it's going to be pretty close. And I'm really only leaning towards Indianapolis because they're at home. And the Houston Texans probably are going for that first overall pick. And a win does not help them. So I see the Colts winning this one 20-13. Then the New York Jets are at the Miami Dolphins. Right now, the Dolphins are a 1.5-point favorite. Both of these teams, just bad teams. Miami has just been careening into the earth all season long. The Jets have been up and down all season long. But I do feel like their defense is going to put together this one. Miami, while they do have slim hopes at a playoff spot, they have a bit to play for, but their quarterback situation is up in the air this week with Bridgewater breaking his finger. Who the hell knows who's going to be their quarterback? Whereas the Jets, their defense is good. They could put together enough, I believe, to beat the Dolphins. And I think the Jets are going to get the win 21-14. Then the Carolina Panthers are at the New Orleans Saints. Right now, the Saints are a 3.5-point favorite. The Saints, even though they beat the Eagles last week, it's not like, it felt like they didn't really want to win that game, especially on the offensive side of the ball. They just kept getting stalled. They had so many turnovers. Even Kamara was very ineffective, as he's been for most of the season, other than when he was injured. Whereas the Panthers, they fought and battled hard. And, I really think they like to play for Wilkes. I don't know if he's going to end up getting the job. Like I've continued to say, I feel like that dude's got to get a shot somewhere, whether it be with Carolina or somewhere else. But, you know, he's got this team playing very well, and I think they have enough to beat the New Orleans Saints, and I have the Carolina Panthers winning 24-16. Then the Cleveland Browns are at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right now the Steelers are a 2.5-point favorite. Both of these teams, pretty bad. Cleveland's offense has just been absolutely awful since Deshaun Kutson has taken over. The Steelers' defense has gone back to Steelers' defense since Watt came back. And I kind of feel like this is going to be the ugly game of the week, as most Pittsburgh Steelers games have been this season. I think it's going to be mostly just a defensive battle, barely any offense at all, probably a bunch of field goals for the most part with just like one random touchdown here and there. But I do have the Steelers winning this one 17-10. Then on to the afternoon games. We have the Los Angeles Chargers at the Denver Broncos. Right now, the Chargers are a 2.5-point favorite. The Broncos don't really have much to play for other than their pride. The Chargers, I feel like they want to head into the playoffs with a good win. And this is against a division opponent, so you shouldn't overlook them anyways. But I do think the Chargers are going to roll over the Broncos 27-14. Then the New York Giants are at the Philadelphia Eagles. Right now, the Eagles are a 13.5-point favorite, which that's a pretty big margin, in my opinion. The Giants are a playoff team, and this is a division matchup. And Jalen Hurts' status is still up in the air. So 13.5-point favorite's kind of weird, but whatever. The Giants, I still don't really believe in them. But the Eagles, they've lost two in a row, not looking very good. And if Gardner Minshew's still the quarterback this week, what's going to improve? And so I feel like this is going to be a close game. The Giants defense actually has been stepping it up the past month. They look really good. So I kind of feel like it's going to be a hard-fought, close battle. And I really am rooting for the Giants in this one just because the Cowboys could, if the Cowboys win and the Philadelphia Eagles lose, well, we win the division, and I'm pretty happy with that. And there's a possibility we could get the first seed in the NFC as well with that type of loss. So I am rooting for the Giants, but my gut's just saying Philadelphia is going to eke this one out 23-21. Then we have the Arizona Cardinals at the San Francisco 49ers. 49ers are a 13.5-point favorite. Now, that sounds about right, unlike the last matchup, because the Cardinals are awful. They have absolutely nothing to play for. I expect Kingsbury to get fired probably right after this game, especially with the score that I have on this one. The 49ers, they've been playing spectacular this season. They're headed right into the playoffs. They're playing for the number one seed, possibly in the NFC, so I feel like they're going to come out with firing on all cylinders, and I think San Francisco is going to roll in this one 28-10. Then we have the Los Angeles Rams at the Seattle Seahawks. Right now, the Seahawks are a 6.5-point favorite. If the Seahawks get the win and the Packers lose, then they are in. They get that last wild card spot in the NFC. So they need this win no matter what. And then, of course, they need the Packers to lose. The Rams, they've pretty much packed it up. I feel like the Rams packed it up about a month ago. None of their key players have played in a while. And so they don't really have much to play for, even though Baker Mayfield's been pretty solid since he took over at quarterback. But since Seattle has a lot more to play for, they're playing at home, they're playing solid on the defensive side of things, I feel like they're going to put enough together. I feel like this is going to be a competitive matchup, but I think Seattle's going to get the best of the Rams 23-17. Then the last afternoon game is my Dallas Cowboys at the Washington Commanders. Right now, the Cowboys are a 3.5-point favorite. Washington's going to be playing their third-string quarterback. Can't even remember his name right now off the top of my head. Who the fuck cares anyways? The Cowboys are another team that's headed into the playoffs, and they need the win to at least hopefully win the division, maybe get the number one seed. But I feel like they need to win just to have something good to go into the playoffs with. And I feel like they're going to have a really solid game this week. While it is a division matchup, usually those are a bit closer. Washington has absolutely nothing to play for. This is just a bad team. Whereas the Cowboys, I kind of feel like they have a lot of pride at stake in this one, especially the defense. The defense has been kind of iffy with the sacks lately, so I feel like the defense is really going to step it up in this game. Cowboys offense is going to step it up, and I actually think this is going to be a pretty good game from the Cowboys. I've got them winning 30-17. And then rounding out the Week 18 and the regular season of the NFL on Sunday Night Football, we have the Detroit Lions at the Green Bay Packers. Right now, the Packers are a 4.5-point favorite. And if the Packers win this game, they're in the playoffs. Detroit needs Seattle to lose. So if Seattle loses, basically whoever wins this game is in the playoffs. So right now, Green Bay, they are playing great right now, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They're getting a ton of turnovers. And they're setting their offense up in great field position. Aaron Rodgers is starting to click with pretty much all of his receivers right now. The young ones, the old ones, everybody's healthy. And then you also have the ground attack. They have one of the best ground attacks in the league right up there. You know, I think the Cowboys have the best with Pollard and Zeke. But then you got the Packers with Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, who I think are just about the same type of dynamic. So the Packers are playing great right now. Detroit's also playing great. But they're not a very good outdoor team, and I just kind of have a feeling they're going to just fall apart in this one. I do think it's going to be a close game, but I kind of feel like the Packers are going to get the better of Detroit in this one and play a very solid game. And I have Green Bay winning this one 28-20. All right, and now let's move on to what I'm going to call the toxic relationship portion of today's show, because we have a couple of, we have one update and one new toxic relationship to get to in sports. Beginning with the UFC president, Dana White. Over the weekend, he and his wife, there was a video of the two of them in a nightclub in somewhere in Mexico. They were on vacation. It was New Year's Eve. And they started to get in a verbal fight, obviously. They were both pissed off at each other. And then his wife straight up slaps the dude right across the face with some force, too. It wasn't some little bitch slap. She fucking hits the dude. And obviously, Dana White's a big-ass dude. Yes, it's not like he's some little damsel in distress. But she hits him first. And then he kind of, he slaps her a couple times, too. Right after that, but his slaps were such little bitch slaps. I wouldn't even really call them slaps. For the record, both of them look stupid as fuck. I can't believe you people get into these relationships where you hit each other, by the way. And I know most of you, probably are saying to yourself, yeah, right, Katie, you probably have done that too. No, I haven't. Toxic people are not allowed in my life in any way, shape, or form. Relationship, friendship, family. If you are a person I don't want in my life, you are not in my life. I'm not addicted to people like the rest of you. I don't need anybody. I could be by myself and be completely fine. People don't put their hands on me. If you put your hands on me, that's going to be the last fucking thing you ever do. You won't have hands if you put your goddamn hands on me. And that's a fucking fact. There was video of it. It was released with what happened. I will say, I think the fact that Dana White confronted it immediately, he called himself stupid. He said it was a dumb move. Men should never put their hands on women, and they shouldn't. But by the way, as I said, she hit him first. And I'm sorry, people, women should never be placing their hands on men, just like men should never be placing their hands on women. You both look stupid. And like I said, these were two little slaps. They were slaps. It's not like we're talking Chris Brown, Rihanna shit here. We're talking little bitch slaps. They look dumb. Both of them look dumb. Dana White and his wife look stupid as fuck. And that's exactly what he said. But at least he owned up to it. Some people want him to like step down or whatever. In my personal opinion, I don't really think it's that big of a deal. I know people are making a big deal about it or trying to make a big deal about it. But as I reiterate, she hit him first. Nobody's mentioning that aspect of it. Women should not be hitting men. You look stupid. Nobody should ever be placing their hands on themselves. Unless you are actually defending yourself or you're a professional fighter like a boxer or a UFC fighter, those are the only times hitting is allowed. If you are hitting somebody, you're an idiot. And it just looked dumb. They both look stupid. And good for him for owning up to it, unlike losers like Deshaun Cuntson, who can't own up to his bullshit. And then in the next beautiful toxic relationship, we now know what's going to be the fate of the University of Texas Longhorns basketball coach Chris Beard. He was fired yesterday. As you'll remember, he was arrested a couple weeks ago. His fiance called the cops on him. He apparently strangled her and bit her, and he was arrested for this. She then recanted everything and said that did not happen. Regardless, he was fired by the Longhorns yesterday, and I say good fucking riddance. Number one, Longhorns basketball team has actually not suffered from this. They've been playing very well. They're still ranked in the top 10. Can't recall. I believe they're number 7 this week, number 6, somewhere in there. So they're still playing well. They only have 2 losses on the season. So this hasn't really had any type of effect on the actual basketball team itself. And wins or losses, anything in that regard. But as I've stated before, he either is a woman beater or he's about to marry a scandalous, dumbass, lying bitch. Either way, I don't want that coaching my team. And apparently the University of Texas feels the same way. So peace the fuck out, Chris Beard. I hope to never see you again, asshole. All right, now let's move on to much more fun things outside of your dumb fucking toxic relationships. We got a top five this week. Since we have the national championship football game on Monday, I decided I'm going to rank the top five greatest national championship football games of all time. These are, first of all, I only selected games beginning in like the year 2000, because for one, my college football fandom is not like my specialty is NFL football. I eat, sleep, breathe NFL football. I know the whole history of NFL football. I'm the type of person where if you ask me like historical questions on the NFL, there's like a 95% chance I'm going to know the answer because I love NFL football. I know the history of it. I've watched so many games. It's literally been my life for 37 goddamn years. That's why I do this show. I'm football everything. But as far as college football goes, I didn't really become a big fan of it until the kind of like 2000s-ish. I rooted for the Longhorns in the Ricky Williams years, which was kind of like around 1998-ish. So the end of the 90s, basically. So I didn't really watch any national championships pre-2000. So I don't feel like I can rank any of those type of games. I'm sure there were great games pre-2000 for the national championship, but I felt like I should only rank games that I either A, actually watched or am aware of. But actually, all five of these, yes, I did watch all five of them. I do remember them. And so you're also going to think there's a little bit of bias towards the end of this, but trust me, number one is number one. But we'll get there when we get to number one. Let's start it off. Number five on my top five greatest national championship football games ever. Number five is the 2004 Sugar Bowl. It was a good game, but I kind of put this one on there because since I'm a Longhorns fan, my least favorite college football team would be the Oklahoma Sooners. And I had to put a loss for the Oklahoma Sooners on here because I can, and it's hilarious. So it's the 2004 Sugar Bowl, number one, Oklahoma Sooners versus number two, LSU Tigers. This actually was when Nick Saban coached with LSU, and LSU did get the win, 21-14. This was Oklahoma. First of all, LSU was the number one defense in the league. Oklahoma had one of the top offenses in the league. They were averaging about like 49 points per game, over 400 yards per game. They were just rocking and rolling this season. So were LSU, but they were kind of the underdog in this one because at this point in time, Oklahoma was a really good team. As a matter of fact, their quarterback was Jason White, who I just could not fucking stand. He looked like a little fucking Skipper doll to me. He's got his little blonde curly hair and I'm Jason White, guys. And he played for Oklahoma, so there's no way I could like this idiot. But anyways, I loved this game because it was a defensive battle. I mean, both of these teams, it was, the LSU defense really stepped it up. As I said, this Oklahoma team averaged over 40 points per game, over 400 yards per game. Well, guess what? They held Heisman Trophy nominee Jason White to 13 for 37, 102 yards, 2 interceptions, and 7 sacks on the game. So this defense just annihilated White. I mean, they had this dude running for his life. He was on his back. He was tossing interceptions and just playing an absolutely atrocious fucking game in this one. The play of the game, though, was big man ballin' Marcus fucking Spears. This big defensive motherfucker, this defensive lineman, he's a big dude. I mean, he wasn't as big as he was in the NFL because I'm a huge Marcus Spears fan because he was drafted by the Cowboys, so he had a nice little career with the Cowboys, and he's actually a very good analyst on ESPN as well. But this dude, he just gets a ball tossed right to him, and this fat motherfucker is just barreling down the fucking field and gets this beautiful touchdown. I would call it the play of the game. It was hilarious. It was a close battle. pretty much throughout. You know, LSU came right out. A couple of drives were stopped by Oklahoma as well. LSU was about to score, and Oklahoma ended up getting an interception. But then LSU would get an interception on the following drive, and then they would drive down the field, get a touchdown. And in the second quarter, LSU managed to get another touchdown. Oklahoma ended up getting a touchdown. But then in the second half, Oklahoma was limited to one touchdown in the fourth quarter. So it was just a real struggle for Oklahoma. It was actually pretty hilarious to watch. And this was the beginning of Nick Saban, man, and his reign of terror in college football. You know, he would win the national championship with LSU. Then he would go into the NFL with the Miami Dolphins, have a failure of a career in the NFL, and then he takes over for Alabama and now goes down in history as the greatest college football coach ever. And this is where it began, the 2004 Sugar Bowl. Then at number four on my top five greatest national championship football games ever, the 2014 BCS National Championship between number one Florida State and number two Auburn. Florida State would end up winning this game 34-31, and it was crazy because, you know, this was a weird season because nobody really expected Auburn to be that good. If I seem to recall, because I didn't actually do any research on how the regular season went for these guys, but I know I remember FSU dominated this season, but Auburn, I believe, had like that one big crazy like kick return against Alabama. I'm pretty sure this is that season where they had these like really random fucking wins and would end up in the national championship. And we really actually expected FSU to really run away with this game. But at halftime, Auburn was up 21-10. And FSU did not look good offensively. They were just able to kind of like stay in the game, get a field goal here and there. And then in the third quarter, it was just like a defensive battle between both of the teams. But in the fourth quarter was when FSU really got it going, and they would just score 21 points in the fourth quarter. It was literally a back and forth battle between these two in the fourth quarter, where it was like FSU scored, Auburn scored, FSU scored, Auburn scored, and then FSU gets a defensive stand, and then Auburn gets this field goal. And so with a minute 19 left to go in the fourth quarter, down 31-27, Jameis Winston and FSU just put together this amazing offensive drive, and they would end up scoring the game-winning touchdown, Jameis Winston to Kelvin Benjamin, and a beautiful, this is probably one of the most underrated national championship games because it doesn't usually get discussed that much, but it was crazy because it started off like, you're like, shit, does FSU realize that they're in the national championship? And then the second half, they just really are just hanging in there, and then fourth quarter hits, and they're able to put together just this amazing comeback win. And like I said, FSU would go on to win the national championship 34-31. Then at number three on my top five greatest national championship football games of all time, the 2017 college football playoff. Number one Alabama versus number two Clemson. This is the one where Clemson won 35-31. And what was insane about this game is it was just back and forth. I mean, just like that last one where I said they were trading scores in the fourth quarter, this one was like trading scores for three quarters straight. You know, they were just going back and forth. And Alabama did eventually get the lead 24-14, and it was kind of looking like Clemson was just not going to get it going. But then in the fourth quarter, they would go off for 21 fucking points and put together just an amazing back-and-forth battle with Alabama. And then so with 2:01 left to go in the fourth quarter, Clemson is down 31-28. It's crazy, too, because in this one, this is when Deshaun Watson was the quarterback for Clemson. And actually, Jalen Hurts was the quarterback for Alabama. And Watson was getting sacked. He had a fumble. He had an interception. There were just some weird things going on offensively for Clemson. So it looked like they were down and out. And then once the fourth quarter hit, they just get it going. And so they get on this last game-winning drive, and it is a crazy drive. They're able to get down to the field, and then Deshaun Watson ends up throwing the game-winning touchdown to Hunter Renfro, and they would go on to win this one 35-31 in just a crazy matchup between two great teams. And you know, as I said, Alabama, their defense was really just holding it down. They had some great stops, but Clemson just stayed in it. They just kept their head up, and then once that fourth quarter hit, they just kept scoring, and they would go on to win the national championship in 2017. Then at number two on my top five greatest national championship football games of all time, the 2003 Fiesta Bowl between number one Miami and number two Ohio State. Ohio State would get a double overtime win, 31-24. This was such a battle. Every quarter, it was like the first quarter belonged to Miami. Then the second quarter was Ohio State. Then the third quarter, Miami. Then the fourth quarter, Ohio State. And then overtime, it was just like such a battle between both of these teams. And then it went into double overtime. This Miami team was a powerhouse team. Ohio State, they were a good team, but nobody really believed in them like they believed in Miami. So for them to get this win was a pretty big deal. Like I said, it was back and forth the whole way throughout. And then Ohio State actually ends up getting the lead at one point. But Miami's battling back. They end up getting the game-tying field goal, barely. They tie it up at 17. They go into double overtime. Miami scores a touchdown. Then Ohio State scores a touchdown in the first overtime. So then we go into the second overtime. And Maurice Claret, yeah, you remember that name. Actually, funny coincidence in this game. Two of the players who played in this game, Kellen Winslow Jr. was tight end for Miami. He's in prison for raping an old lady. And then you have Maurice Claret, who also ended up in prison at one point. I don't know if he's still in prison. I can't even recall what he went to prison for. But Maurice Claret, he's another one. So we have two felons, and future felons in this game. But Claret, one of them, he actually ended up scoring the game-winning touchdown in double overtime in this one. And then the Ohio State defense would just really lock it down. So they would get the win in this one. Number one on my top five greatest national championship football games of all time. You cannot argue that this is the greatest national championship football game ever. Ever. And I know you're going to say, it's because you're a fan, Katie. It's because, no, y'all. This is the greatest national championship game of all time. That would be the 2006 Rose Bowl. Between number one USC and number two my Texas Longhorns. Oh, God, this game, I've seen it so many times, it still gives me goosebumps to watch. What a fucking jam-packed game of excellence. First of all, Longhorns got the win 41-38, just if y'all didn't know. But what a fucking game this was. I mean, back and forth. Just when you thought USC's pulling away from the game, Texas is like, nah, bitch, we got this. And then when it looked like Texas was running away with the game, USC's like, nah, bitch, we got this. And it went down to the wire. So there's a couple of great aspects about this game that I just really absolutely love. I mean, as I said, it was back and forth. We had some crazy players in this. You know, we got Reggie Bush for USC. We got Matt Leinart for USC. We got Lendale White for USC. Then on the offense, or on the opposite side of the field, we've got Vince Young, Limus Swede, Earl Thomas. I mean, we've got all these Aaron Ross. We've got so many fucking good players on both teams. This is just two stacked powerhouses against each other. This is one of the reasons why I feel like this is the greatest national championship of all time, because it was unquestionable. In a couple of these other national championships that I brought up, there was like controversy due to the rankings and all that shit. So this was unquestionable that these were the two best teams in college football at that time. So one of my favorite moments was actually in the second quarter. Reggie Bush had this hilarious run where he's like, I'm running. Oh my God, I'm going to get tackled. Let me just throw the ball behind me. And then the Texas Longhorns get this beautiful pickup of a fumble that I don't know what the hell Reggie Bush was thinking there, but that was one of the key plays to that national championship, because it would have set the Trojans up at least in field goal range had he just, you know, taken the tackle. But for some reason, he decided to be cute and just try and lateral the ball behind him to a USC player. It didn't go quite work out that well for him, but that was the hilarious part of the first half. But really, it was the second half was really what happened here. And for the Longhorns to get this win, they had three straight possessions here to end the game that would just win the game for them. So in the fourth quarter, USC is up 38-26 with 6:42 left on the clock. You know, at this point, it's like prayer time if you're a Longhorns fan, because you're like, shit, we're down 38-26. We got to score. Then we either A, got to get the onside kick, or we just got to hope the defense is able to stop. Now, one thing about this game is that, you know, USC was all about Reggie Bush. This was the year that he won the Heisman. You know, Matt Leinart was also a dude up for the Heisman. But their standout star in this game was Lendale White. The Texas Longhorns could not stop Lendale White all night. Dude had two touchdowns. He was making the big plays all night. So it was all Lendale fucking White. But the Longhorns had Vince Young, and it was all about Vince Young. So with 6:42 in the fourth quarter, you're thinking as a Longhorns fan, how the fuck are we going to do this? Well, Vince Young is able to drive us down the field. He ends up running in another beautiful touchdown to get the score to 38-33. USC's up still. So we kick the ball to USC, and we're going to hope our defense is able to stop USC. Well, it's 4th and 1 at the Texas 45-yard line. 1 fucking yard, and Pete Carroll decides to go for it. Well, if there's one play that the Texas Longhorns defense stand up for, it is this 4th and 1. Ball goes to Lendale White, the dude who has done it all night. This is the MVP of the night. If the Longhorns don't win this game, and USC does, Lendale White is the fucking MVP of the night. But guess what? That Longhorns defense fucking stood up on 4th and 1, and they hold them down. And it's not even close either, y'all. It is one of those where it's like right off the bat, you know we got this shit. So the Longhorns are set up in pretty damn good field position, and we got that dude VY carrying us down the field. Now, we get a good pass, which actually ends up, the receiver catches the ball for a first down, but luckily one of the USC defenders grabs the face masks and gives us an extra 15 yards, which sets us up in beautiful, beautiful field position. So we're in the red zone. First down, boom, nothing. Second down, boom, nothing. Third down, boom, nothing. 4th and 5. The greatest play in national fucking championship history. Vince Young takes the snap from the shotgun, running around a little bit. And I know what I was saying, but I'm guaranteeing you every Texas Longhorns fan saying is, just fucking run the ball, VY. You're the man. So what does VY do? VY runs it down the fucking sideline and boop, just gets it right in the fucking end zone for the game-winning touchdown. Beautiful game. Beautiful play. Shout out to Vince Young. Fuck yeah. Texas Longhorns win 41-38. Such a fun game. As I said, I still fucking, I rewatched the highlights of it last night, and just seeing that last touchdown, it's just beautiful to see. And as I've said, I've seen that game so many times, I can't even count, because when I first moved here to Austin in 2007, my first job here was, I worked at the mall at a Texas Longhorns pro shop. And so we had TVs in the store, and we would play DVDs, and they were Texas Longhorns DVDs. So we only had so many to play. So I basically watched the national championship game like every day for that like year I worked there. I kid you not, no fucking lie. When we had that game on, when it would get to that last drive where Vince Young would score as a matter of fact, those last three drives I just described to you, the crowd would be building, but that last drive, no lie, we would have like a crowd of like 20 people gathered outside or in the store watching this thing like it just happened live. And we would all cheer. We knew what was coming. And every time we would see Vince Young score that touchdown, it was like it was the first time all over again. So that's honestly, that's how much that game means to us here. But no lie, try and argue with me. What is better than that game? Seriously, number one, number two, easily. I mean, there were three Heisman Trophy nominees in this game. Reggie Bush won it. Vince Young should have won it. But hey, I think that's what fueled this national championship win. I'd much rather have that than the stupid fucking Heisman. And then Matt Leinart was up for it too. So three Heisman nominees in this game. A whole bunch of dudes would go on to play in the NFL and be successful as well from this game. So what is better? And plus, it was back and forth, like the whole game from the jump till the end. Because even, so there was like 16 seconds left after Vince Young scored that touchdown. And so the Longhorns would have to kick the ball off. And I'm sorry, when you got Reggie Bush on your team, that dude could score in a matter of fucking seconds. And he almost put them in good field goal range at the end of the game because they were able to get a bomb off. And Reggie Bush, he would end up getting, he would go out of bounds. But if he just wiggles the right way, gets the right juke, defender falls down, he either sets them up in good field goal position for the win or scores a touchdown. So this game literally came down to the very last fucking play. But it's my favorite fucking national championship. As I said, still love watching that to this day. And those last three drives for the Longhorns, oh, just beauty. So, yeah, I actually enjoyed all five of those games. As I said, the Oklahoma loss was fucking hilarious, but these were all back-and-forth battles and all excellent national championship football games. And hopefully Monday night's national championship game also lives up to this, and maybe it will replace one of these others in the top five. It will never replace number one. Trust me on that one. Ain't nothing gonna be better than that USC-Texas Longhorns game. Bet me on that shit. But we will discuss that game on Monday, and I hope you guys all enjoy the last week of the NFL, and it's going to be playoff time next week, bitches. Go Cowboys! I'll talk to you fools on Monday.